You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. It's going to be a heck of a busy hump day today, so be ready. It's going to be very, very busy. We're going to start right off the bat with Grover Norquist, Dan Shearer, bottom of the hour. Joanne DiFilippo has a short report on the Pima County Board meeting yesterday. There is some amazing things. We have Steve Farley from the Humane Society before the show's over. We got bomb squads running around downtown Tucson. We got this show's going to go so fast. We'll sell you the whole seat, but you only need the edge. Let's go to the phones. We have President of American Tax Reform, Americans for Tax Reform, Grover Norquist. Grover, welcome back, sir.
Good to be with you. Hello, Tucson.
Hey, I was just watching Corinne Pierre there, our amazing press secretary. Hold on, I gotta keep my straight face.
And when he says amazing,
and she says that the Biden administration has everyone's prepared for a good and stable economy, or whatever she said yesterday. I mean, how does this stuff fall out of their mouths? It's amazing.
Well, okay, maybe she's telling the truth. They are prepared for a stable economy. The problem is that's not what they're going to get. It's like when you walk out into a thunderstorm being prepared for a sunny day. Sometimes people tell the truth when they don't realize that they think they're lying, but they've actually said something that's true. They are prepared. They'd be in great shape if the economy was stable and doing well. It isn't. But here's the challenge Biden has. He says, I get mad at myself when I do something that screws things. I know it's my fault, and I did it, and just no fun at all. I can deal with problems. If, you know, some guy runs into me with a car. Well, that wasn't my fault. But if I run into something, Biden's presidency is nothing but self-inflicted wounds. Friendly fire from himself, where he inflated the currency. He took $2 trillion we don't have and threw it up in the air and said, don't go to work. We're going to be writing checks to people. And then surprised when the economy, we didn't add any jobs to the economy in the first year when we threatened to spend the $2 trillion that the economists, the government economists, hadn't expected to come in just from the recovery and lightening up on COVID restrictions and so on. Nobody went to work because of $2 trillion. Now, people walked away with money. 20% of it went to people in China, Russia, scam artists. Hopefully, we had some domestic scam artists stealing that money, not just foreigners, but it seems like the Russians. And I don't know why it is, but the Nigerians are very big in this business. I talked to one of the guys who designs efforts to stop people from stealing money from unemployment insurance and other things that the Biden people were throwing money at. And I said, well, why is it Nigeria? What's the matter with Ghana or whatever? He said, no, Ghana does it too. It's not as much as Nigeria in terms of getting people to come in and hack in the government program. So 20% went to somebody that wasn't supposed to have it. Some of them aren't even Americans. This is all what Biden did. Then he shuts down the pipelines. He says he's going to shut down all energy. And then he wonders why there isn't more investment in energy and why people don't look for more energy. He does what he did in Kabul, convincing the world that he's Jimmy Carter weak. So just one thing after another, and it's all his fault. And how does he wake up in the morning and come up with a new theory about why it's Putin's fault greedy businessmen. Inflation is caused by a greedy businessman. Evidently, when Trump was president, businessmen in America did not want to make more money. But as soon as Biden got elected, they all wanted to make more money. That was what happened.
It reminds me of that movie 50 First Dates, where the guy has the short-term memory problem, so he can't remember what happened the day before. And that's why he said 50 First Dates kind of thing. I feel like that's Biden. He doesn't even know what's going on half the time.
But what it does do is it just makes it obvious what the modern Democrat Party is. It's around the table, and Biden gets to sit at the head of the table. That's you win the presidency, you get to fly on a plane, you get to sit at the head of the table. But around the table, everything you do has to be checked with the teachers union, the public sector unions, the big city political machines like Chicago and so on. They need cash to keep operating. You have the two wings of the dependency movement, people who are locked into welfare dependency, and people who make $120,000 a year managing the dependency of other people, making sure none of them get jobs and become Republicans. And then you've got all the coercive utopians, Bloomberg's world. You know, I'm smarter and better than you. Let me run your life. You don't want a big gulp. You know, you don't want a vape. You want a teeny car that you can get killed in when you run into a bridge abutment, not a big car that's safe. And by the way, let me show you your new light bulbs, what they're going to look like, and the new 2-hour effort to wash your clothes and dry your clothes, and the dishwashers that take forever, because we'll tell you later why it's important. It used to be important to have hot, small, teeny, lightweight cars that are dangerous because they're not made of metal, they're made of plastic, because we were running out of oil. Then we weren't running out of oil. Now you have to have the same rules because global warming. First global cooling, then global warming, now global change. Somehow they seem to always have the same set of rules that they want to put in. And the reason can change from time to time, but what they want to make us do doesn't change.
So, of course, what's beautiful here, and by beautiful I mean terrifying, is we decided we're going to basically, you know, we've only been reliant on oil and gas for, I don't know, a century or so. And now we're going to basically shut down all production. We're going to, you know, we got what's going on with Ukraine and the Russian natural gas, but we have no plan to replace it other than people who have no money should buy a $70,000 car. Is the mainstream America picking up on that yet, or is it just me and you?
I don't know, because it's never discussed in the press, you know, quote unquote, wind and solar and so on. It's about 3% of energy in the world. It's just a fraction of a fraction. It's not something that can get more efficient or more effective, because there's just limits to how much you can change one thing into the other. And then you've got to put it in a battery, which loses some more of the energy. If you want it to work at night, you know, or when it's not windy, these are not things that generate power all the time when you turn on a switch. There was an article in The Guardian about, you know, people have got to get rid of this idea that there's just going to be energy whenever you need it. We're going to organize our life around when the energy is ready. You will wash your dishes when the sun shines, and you will be able to cook your food when the wind blows, but not in between. A friend who used to be our chief of staff here went to Kenya for 20 years to go work there, and they only get power certain times of the day, and you just organize around it. It can be done. I don't think we should do this to American people, but and Kenya doesn't want to do this because they like it. They just can't afford more better. They would first. I'd really like the 24-hour energy. That would be good. Is that an option here in Kenya? Well, not everywhere in Kenya. So, and coming to a city near you, they're talking about brownouts now here. If energy gets more expensive, we're expected to use less of it. They want us to ride on subways, not on highways. I mean, I don't quite understand what in the psyche of the liberals, why they like this, but it does happen to give you control over people. In Russia, you know where everybody is because they ride on trains, not on highways.
Yeah. You know, talking about control on people, you reminded me of Corona lockdowns. So you and I have been talking about how most of these people have been pretty wrong on most of these issues for the last 2 years. It's amazing how I think we were right on about 98% of all the issues that they use to impose control on the American people, businesses, and churches. Am I missing on is that number too high or too low?
Well, no, I think it's pretty much spot on. Well, first of all, they did tell us at the beginning, when you shut things down for a while, it will not reduce the number of people who get COVID. It'll just spread it out a bit so you don't have this spike, okay? Well, we never came dangerously near not having enough ventilators. People panicked because certain towns in Italy didn't have enough ventilators. Well, I'm sorry. We had lots of the stuff here, and you can move it around. Everyone's like, oh, it's getting very bad here, okay? but 20 miles down the road, you can pick up a vent. You can carry it yourself in a car. And so they they kind of told us this is just to spread it out if you thought it was this surge, but you knew fairly early on it wasn't. And they doubled down because the experts – remember that Happy Days half-hour show where Fonzie – has to say he's sorry, you know, he was wrong, and he can't say he's wrong, and he's right. I was, boo, 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 boo. And it's a half, the whole joke is you can't say
that. I'm sir.
and Fauci and all those guys around him were in, the rule would be this, and then the rule would change, but we were never wrong. Okay? Because I hope people are more skeptical of claims that, you know, it's science. You know, the whole idea of settled science, the whole point of science is you keep experimenting to find out more and more about what's true. And you don't, when you're fighting a disease, go, well, we now know the answer. And it was expensive. It was the first time we shut down. Usually when there was a disease, you'd protect people who either had it and quarantine them. Or people who are susceptible to it and keep them away. I mean, they should have protected old folks' homes, not dumped people who had COVID there because they didn't want them in their nice hospitals.
So I want to give you a little local thing about the Fonzie sorry thing that you just came up with, which is brilliant. So Pima County, where we're at, is one of the worst liberal Democrat counties in America. Okay. And what happened was the Small Business Commission, that is made up of a majority of Democrat representatives, has asked for years, and they finally went to the Board of Supes and said, hey, we'd like a few $100,000 to do an objective, independent audit of all these decisions you guys made in relation to its effect on the business community in Tucson. And they shot it down saying, well, you can just ask us. We'll let you know. So... And they ruined many lives and businesses down here, Grover, like you would never believe.
Well, we did get a couple of good things that came out of COVID. One of them was the idea that some people can work from home. Zoom saves a lot of costs on flying people around. And we allowed people to move and take their medical degrees and their licenses in Massachusetts to be good in Texas and Wisconsin, and telemedicine, which, you know, we've had telephones for a while. You'd think we could have figured out how to update laws to make telemedicine a thing. My best friend from sixth grade sits on the beach in Hawaii and reads people's CAT scans in Wisconsin in the middle of the night in Wisconsin, because you don't want to wake up some doctor at 3 a.m. say, could you look at this CAT scan or this X-ray? Instead, you get somebody who's fully awake and not wearing shoes, doing this stuff. So we could do a lot of it. This is happening, and it does reduce costs. It's actually very helpful. They sped up. I mean, one of the things that people don't talk about because of the success of the Trump administration is that they dramatically sped up how you got the vaccine. They knew something like in June that they had something that worked, but then you had to test it to see if.
Well, now we're finding out it doesn't really. It worked for a while, but it's the idea that we're boosting 5-year-olds is absolutely sickening. So
it doesn't stop it completely; it just makes it less horrible for you and so on. But they knew what they had, what they wanted, or as good as they could get. But then they still had to do these tests for months and months. This whole thing if they'd gone by the book, it had taken them several years to get any vaccine of any quality approved. They sped it up. You know what? We should do that for all new drugs that are vaguely important. I mean, if somebody has a new aspirin that's 5% different, maybe you're not in a hurry, but the kinds of drugs for Alzheimer's and other things, do we really have to move as slowly as we do? They keep talking about ridiculous numbers about how much it costs to get a drug approved, and then you wonder why does this pill cost so much? Well, we spent $1 billion getting the government's approval. We got to sell a lot of those pills,
yep,
not to pay for making the pill, to pay for the government FDA looking at it and going to meetings. Remember they would have these meetings and tell you, well, we'll tell you in a few days. They had all the information in front of them when they did. that was being organized around people's willingness to come and have a meeting with FDA people deciding something, they could have, could have been a lot faster. I hope the FDA is not allowed in the future to run around. When they do a study and say this is science, I think you should only be allowed to do that if the study itself is on the web and anyone can look at it.
Yep.
When they say, oh, we've got this study, social science or regular science, and it's peer-reviewed, which means four of my friends said it was great. Okay. Now, when people blurb other people's books, they don't read them. It's a great book. He's a friend of yours.
Hey,
and someday you're going to want him to blurb your book.
Grover, we got to get going. We're coming up on a hard break. So good talking to you as always, sir. I know you got to get ready for a meeting. So always appreciate your time.
We got it. Have fun.
You too, my friend. That's Grover Norquist. He is, of course, the president and CEO of Americans for Tax Reform. Dan Shearer coming up from the Green Valley News. Joanne DiFilippo with a quick one coming up at the top of the hour. So you're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. All right, we got like 2 minutes here. We went long with Grover, of course. So let's go real quick. Number one, Sean McCluskey and his beautiful wife Ashley had a baby yesterday, 6 pounds 2 ounces. So congratulations to them. Everyone's good. Mom's good. Baby's good. 6 pounds 2 ounces. So the kid, for some reason, wanted a Lindy Thunderburger out of coming out of the womb. I don't know why. So weird.
Congratulations.
At the same time, we had, and Drew hit me up, right? And this is something that, I don't know, I guess I'll have to get into it really. Grover and his love for the vaccines, I don't know where that comes from. He's usually a data-driven guy. I don't know if he has a big sponsor at Americans for Tax Reform that loves vaccines. I don't know what it is. But the vaccine had, I would say, it has so many bad. We're seeing all the papers are coming out, right? Between infertility, low sperm count, heart attacks in young people. We blew it on the vaccines too. We blew the whole thing. So Drew, you're right. I don't know what's going on with Grover. So Billy number two sends this. It was in the Daily Scar today. And it was Bank of America saying, we've increased our U.S. minimum hourly wage to $22 an hour on our way to 25 by 2005. You know what the response to that was, right? It's a cost savings after you get rid of half the employees. So, I mean, think about it. Every time you're at the bank, this is what I love. They train the bank people. Are you using your app? Are you using your app, right? So what's happening is they're training the people to lose their own jobs by telling you to use the app. We ain't that dumb over here. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, Dan Shearer, Green Valley News. All right, you know that music means got to head down old I-19 to a beautiful community where fights on the bocce ball courts are up 1.7%. Let's go to our good friend Dan Shearer. Dan, good morning, sir.
Good morning, and there is. I am loath to tell you this, but there is a new game in town. It's rising in popularity here. Cornhole. Yeah.
I thought he was going to say nude pickleball because there was that article last week.
Yeah. So it's so funny. Did you send me that?
It was going around.
Let's just say that. Multiple people sent me this dumb nude pickleball thing. And I was just like.
Yeah, not me.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, not me, not down here. Editor can only take so much. So
there's two. I've noticed as a guy who's followed your work and your staff's work over the years, there's two recurring themes, right? Green Valley Recreation is a emotional mess, right? Management mess.
Right.
And you guys can't keep a hospital open. So with all of those older, sicker people on their fancy insurance and Medicare, no one can keep a hospital open in Green Valley.
Right. Green Valley Rec, by the way, is has got a great board right now and heading in the right direction. The hospital is on the verge of closing, unfortunately. This is the hospital that opened just 7 years ago, 2015, as Green Valley Hospital, and then it went into bankruptcy within a couple of years, came out of bankruptcy, was renamed the Santa Cruz Valley Regional Hospital, and it was owned by an investment company out of California, still is owned by them. But about a year ago, they sold off the land and the building to a what's called a REIT. It's a real estate investment trust. So they actually own all the physical stuff there now. And the hospital is really just kind of the equipment and the people. And they have, for 7 years, struggled. And the reason is they're not associated with a TMC or a Banner or a Northwest. They're an independent hospital. The second problem is that they're a rural hospital, and rural hospitals have been taking it on the chin for at least 20 years. We've had some stats in our story online now about rural hospital closures, and there are many. And so we are considered a rural hospital, even though we are part of the Tucson metro area. So the struggle is
what's the guts of the dynamics of why?
Well, what I learned when this hospital was going in, and I was walking the grounds as it was going up and watching them put the staff together and everything, it's getting doctors to come down here. And remember, a lot of specialties have to be within X number of minutes, let's just say 20, of the hospital, meaning if that's where you have to live. And a lot of people are not ready to move to Green Valley, even though there's some beautiful homes here. But getting doctors was one of the big problems there. The reimbursement from Medicare has dropped, and from other insurances has dropped like a rock. That didn't help also. Then when the pandemic hit, the not having a pulmonologist, which meant, you know, you can't use a ventilator, meant that we could not get the real bad COVID patients here. We could have the ones who just need to be hospitalized a day or two without a ventilator, but missed out on a lot of that.
So where were they on all that fat vaccine and testing money?
They did get a lot of that, which helped them just keep the doors open. And they did have several vaccine clinics at the hospital, you know, these drive-through things. And they got money that small businesses were getting just to kind of keep afloat. And a lot of that is probably what kept them open the last couple of years. And so they did try to become a state-designated hospital for COVID patients. That didn't go anywhere. Frankly, we're just too far out of the way, and again, the staffing. But then when COVID hit, started losing nurses, because nurses could make a whole lot of money as traveling nurses or elsewhere, and everybody nationwide was undergoing that problem. So where we are today is that a few weeks ago they announced that TMC had signed a non-binding commitment to potentially buy the hospital.
That's a hell of a phrase.
It was
non-binding commitment.
I know. It's what it is. My guess is that when you sign one of those, it allows you to look at some financials, because it says, yeah, we're pretty serious, but we're not completely committed. Well, at the last minute, TMC pulled out, and now they're just kind of left here. Now, TMC took 7 months to get to the point where they said no, and this hospital simply cannot afford to go through that process again, another 6-7 months, and pay people. So what they did on Monday was all of this triggered the WARN Act, W-A-R-N, and that's just a federal action that requires 60 days notice to employees before a mass layoff or a plant closure. And so the WARN Act has been triggered. However, what it really means is that you have to pay your employees the equivalent of 60 days pay. The hospital could close at any time as long as they're going to pay those employees. So if suddenly you have some nurses who are saying, well, wait a minute, if they're going to look like they're closing, we're going to just go get jobs elsewhere. And if you cannot operate the hospital because you don't have staff. You have to close the doors, and it could close in sections. Like, it could be just no inpatient at first, but they could keep the ER open or outpatient or whatever. But they have not announced that they're closing because they still have a very, very slim hope or two. But they're really edging toward it, and now the question is, what do you do with an empty hospital?
So what does the region need? If you were going to have the Dan Shearer magic wand, what's that? What are we missing other than more EGs and Chipotles?
What does it need to attract doctors or what?
No, just blow up make it anything you want. It could be non-medical. It could be, is it more senior housing kind of stuff or?
Yeah, we do need more senior and more what I'm going to call affordable housing. We also need our apartments. We have very few apartment complexes down here, and that's an issue also. And so there's the kids grow up and they're not ready to move to Rancho and they can't afford it, but they want to stay in the area. Very few apartment options. And you know what? We don't need the old luxury home apartments or whatever they call them. We don't need that. We don't need something that costs someone $1,500 a month. We need something that truly is, affordable, where you don't have to have six roommates to get in there.
Gotcha.
That's one of them. We are increasing in light industry. The town of Sarita has led the way in drawing some of that to its Samtech Center. That's been a good thing. That's always, as you're developing, we're getting the rooftops, but what do we need to become more of a real town? And remember, by the way, this hospital might close, but 9 miles north in the town of Sarita, we have Northwest Hospital, which has opened. It's 18 beds, and it can expand, but I will tell you that they don't like us saying this, but it's true. It's a feeder hospital to the other Northwest bigger hospitals, and people don't like that. Why would you put a hospital in the middle of a community where the median age is 35 and everybody's having babies and not have labor and delivery there? Well, the answer is because it doesn't bring as much money as other specialties. So that was for us a red flag immediately that really what they're doing is, some things can be handled there. That's fine, but a lot of them, they're just shipping the patients to Tucson.
I can't believe a hospital's not altruistic.
I'm done to learn this.
Man, go to break. I can't handle it.
It was a real big red flag. And again, what they are doing is bringing seminars and speakers and stuff like that. That's a helpful thing, considering, remember, there was a big pile of dirt there before. So we're glad they're here. We wish that they would allow more patients to stay because going to Tucson is exactly what we don't want to do. So
before we go to break, I just want real quick. What's the update on the Trump hater that went to the big kegger?
He's be arraigned tomorrow. I plan to be there, and we'll be in the courtroom, and it's just, an arraignment is where they bring charges against you. However, at that point, those charges could also be dropped, and so he has one for, I think it was assault, and the other one for trespassing. And so my guess is that the assault one will be dropped based on the video evidence. I don't know about the other one. So that is tomorrow morning.
Where is that going to happen?
Here at our Justice Court. These are very, very low level charges.
Who's going to be the overseeing that?
It is not going to be Ray Carroll. I'm sure he's really upset to miss this one, but there's a judge named Joe Klein who's going to be sitting in because Ray is off at a conference. But if you'd like me to text in and let you know what happens,
sure, please.
Certainly do that. Yeah, so that's at 8:30, but there are a lot of arraignments going on at the same time. They kind of do them in a group, so it might take a while, but we'll try to get to you before 9.
And then I guess the whole thing of, the whole idea of Blake Masters with his hands around his neck. No, again, I kept on watching, like, the Zapruder film. I just don't see what you're seeing. So, and I guess it didn't really make big of a splash nationally, so.
I did make a big splash nationally, and I've had hate mail from across the country, and it's still coming in. So if you want to judge it that way, maybe I'm a little more sensitive here. But, someone, threatens to kick your dog, it's like, well, wait a minute, that's really mean.
That's very mean.
It's very mean, but it did it did make a splash nationally. Of course, he's turning lemons into lemonade and saying, you know, if you attack a woman at one of my events, I'm gonna take care of you. Well, the woman attacked him, and that's what I'm seeing on the video. And I did see his hands around this man's neck. However, we don't know what Blake saw and when he saw it. And so my guess is that he saw the man's reaction to her punches, which very well could have looked like he was attacking her. And his viewpoint probably was such where maybe that's the case. But, you know, as I told someone, I said, what I appreciate about Blake Masters is that we see too many videos on YouTube of people when there's a tragedy unfolding right in front of them, they whip out their cameras and just start videoing. He at least got involved. And so you have to appreciate that. It was, again, killing a fly with a hammer, but he did get involved.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back with Dan Shearer from the Green Valley News, gvnews.com, 790-2040. Joanne's going to be calling up at the top of the hour, DeFilippo, just with a little short shot of about three or four, as Pete Puma would say, that happened at the Pima County board meeting. And one is we're going to delay the budget until after the fiscal year starts. And that's fascinating also. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice.
On Este, Semisonic. Nice call, Christopher.
Thank you, sir. It's an S kind of Wednesday, a little saga. We got our good friend Dan Shearer, Green Valley News. Dan, thanks for holding on. I appreciate it, sir.
Sure.
Hey, how's your brother doing? It looks like he's back again.
He is. He's been back in Ukraine for about 3 weeks. He is edging close to where the action is, and it's a pretty dangerous week, actually. The Russians have decided that anybody who is helping people get to the western part of the country is actually kidnapping them. And so, because, of course, they now consider it their territory and those people Russian citizens. And so it's made things a little dicier, but he has managed to get a lot of supplies to people, particularly orphanages, et cetera, and is working hard. We had a group of women here make some quilts, and those actually arrived yesterday, and he's taking those literally to the front. Lots of people in that area who could I guess be reminded that people here have not forgotten about them and the struggle. So it continues, and he's in the thick of it.
Tell me about what's his take of the reality of the struggle? What do the Ukrainians feel? Do they feel like they're winning? Are we just in stalemate time? What's the reality of what your brother's, what is he hearing from people on the ground?
What he's hearing from people on the ground is that their number one fear is that people are going to forget about him. And the struggle is as real today as it was on day one. Someone is trying to take their land, and they are not going to allow that to happen. There definitely was a turn in the 3 weeks my brother was home, and that is that the Russians kind of developed a different strategy, focused on the east, and have had some big wins. This shouldn't be a surprise given the strength of their military, although they're incredibly inept, but the strength of their military and, again, carting in mercenaries from other parts of the world. So we're not surprised at this. But I think there are some real basic things that they're concerned about. Running out of ammunition is one of them. Troops that are being fatigued or, frankly, being killed off, and not having the proper training. So this is why you see Zelensky on TV a lot begging for some basics. Is you know what? If they have to fight it themselves, they will do it, and the United States has given an awful lot of money toward this. We know this, and they're grateful for it, but the struggle is not over. And so it's very interesting to see Putin at an economic conference recently talk about how things are pretty fairly stable in his country, that the economic sanctions and businesses pulling out and all this hasn't had a real impact, which is absolutely a lie, and Russian leadership has, we know, has lied for forever. And so it has had a huge impact, but they are still trying to send that message to their people that it's not a big deal and we will be stronger without them. So, but we also see that they threaten other countries. I think Lithuania may have been just the latest ones when they're making decisions that could harm the Russians. So Russia is certainly not on its knees, but it has not been in a battle. Expected to be a very short battle, and it hasn't been. So I can't say that they're encouraged, but I can say they're driven, and that's how we would be if somebody tried to come in and take our country.
Hey, let's switch gears on you again. Did you watch the part of the board meeting yesterday where Cazares Kelly decided not to show up to answer questions?
We had a reporter there. I didn't actually watch it, but we have a story, and I'm well aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So Steve Christie's like, well, here's all the questions I was going to ask her. And what's really interesting when you watch the video is Bronson, who, of course, criticizing Cazares Kelly's inexperience, got accused by a racist by her own party.
Correct.
She's in for what with Steve. She's like, what? Why would you do that? What? Right? I mean, she was pretty openly derisive of Cazares Kelly's ineptitude and, her own derisiveness.
Well, exactly. And, you know, there's a couple of questions we should ask on this. And, again, she sent out voter ID cards. Under any scenario, should you send something to voters that is incorrect? And that's what she did. And then, and the bigger question is, why the hurry? She was not under any statutorily imposed deadlines to do this. Wait, we have redrawn districts. We do this every 10 years. The Board of Supervisors approved the changes, and there would have been plenty of time to get the cards to voters in whatever arbitrary deadline that she set. And there was just no need to do it. So it's going to cost us a little more than $20,000 to resend 84,000 cards. And This I know is chump change to the county, but it's $20,000 to me, and I'm a taxpayer. And so don't write that off as just being, that's contingency money. And I think that rubbed Sharon Bronson the wrong way also. It's like, no, it's taxpayer money, and we have to spend every single penny like it's our own. And I think that's what's not going on here. And very briefly, people are going to say, well, gosh, why didn't Steve get really upset that she wasn't there? Doesn't she answer to him? She doesn't. She's elected. She answers to voters.
Well, he also controls one-fifth of her budget.
That's right. That's that's what he does have.
All right.
By the way.
All right, my friend. Great job as always. Have a good week.
Thank you.
It's our friend Dan Shearer, Green Valley News. Joanne DeFilippo is coming on right after. She's got just a quick hit shot, quick shots here. So of what happened at that board meeting yesterday. Wake up.